ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Good evening and welcome to PM. I'm Samantha Donovan, coming to you from the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation in Melbourne. Tonight, the youngest victim of the Bondi terror attack, 10-year-old Matilda, laid to rest after an emotional funeral. Also, the Prime Minister admits his government could have done more as he announces new laws to tackle anti-Semitism, including measures to crack down on hate speech, something experts say is needed desperately.
Having criminal provisions for hate speech is incredibly important. This will give us the protections that will allow the government to take action rather than leaving it to the community.
More victims of Sunday's terror attack at Bondi have been laid to rest today, including 10-year-old Matilda, the youngest of the 15 people killed by the gunman. Hundreds of mourners poured into a Jewish memorial centre in Sydney's east to honour her life, wearing stickers bearing her name and the image of a bumblebee, a nod to her middle name, Bee. Tanya Dendrinos prepared this report.
A memorial prayer delivered during a service filled with anguish.
It is really an impossible task to be able to stand here today and try to give some words of comfort, words of strength, when in reality words fail you.
Rabbi Yehoram Ullman, who yesterday laid his son-in-law to rest, led the service, saying it's unnatural for her parents and grandparents to have to farewell 10-year-old Matilda.
Matilda grew up like a child who loved the things children love. She loved outdoors, loved animals. She went to school, she had friends, everybody loved her.
New South Wales Premier Chris Minns read a poem called Ode to Matilda.
She bore the name Matilda to honour this great land. Australia's heart and spirit, forever hand in hand. Now angels gather softly their wings, a silken shroud, and heaven holds her closely far above the cloud. Her spirit, like a swagman's, will never fade away. She's waltzing with the angels, where love will always stay.
Matilda, who was described by her school community as our little ray of sunshine, was the youngest of 15 victims of Sunday's terror attack in Bondi. Another victim was named publicly today, 50-year-old father of four, Adam Smythe. His family has issued a statement saying Adam and his wife Katrina were walking at Bondi Beach when the attack took place. It named his favourite sporting teams, English Premier League club Liverpool, the Sydney Swans and the Manly Sea Eagles. His family says we will forever cherish the time we have had with him. Adam was a generous and kind person who will be dearly missed and is forever irreplaceable. At the memorial site outside the Bondi Pavilion, a prayer for peace rang out. The sea of floral tributes is ever growing. Among the flowers are words of comfort, soft toys, and even a football jersey. Tributes to those lost. One of the survivors, Arsen Ostrovsky, returned to the scene today to share his story. He says he was separated from his wife and children at the Hanukkah event when he was grazed by a bullet.
I took a picture of myself as I was bloodied on the ground to send to my wife. Love you. The only two words. The only two words that matter. I didn't know if that was going to be the last two words. She and the kids had thankfully survived and they had escaped. By the time I got to hospital, I don't know how much blood I had lost. And the doctors said it was a miracle that I was millimetres away from life and death.
He and his family relocated back to Australia just a few weeks ago after spending more than a decade in Israel.
When we told our children, my elder daughter who's eight, she asked me, Abba, Daddy, does that mean no more boomies? Meaning no more rockets, no more sirens, no more running to bomb shelter. And I said, no, sweetie, no more boomies. You're safe. This is Australia. I was wrong. Very, very wrong.
He says he hopes this tragedy becomes what he calls a transformational watershed moment.
If we do not learn from this, if we do not come together from this, if we do not take the appropriate steps, if our leaders do not show real, serious, tangible, immediate leadership, then hatred will fester and catastrophes like this can repeat itself. The first step is, I think, for the Prime Minister to come here to this very place. Ultimately, he is the Prime Minister and the buck stops with him. He is the Prime Minister and he needs to take responsibility.
The crime scene at Bondi Beach was today lifted following the end of a police operation. There was a sombre mood as people were able to return to the park where the shooting took place.
Surreal. I walk past people and you can hear bits of their conversation and it's real. I think that's what I'm feeling, that it actually is real. It's not just what I saw on TV. Yeah, and it's just beautiful down here, and to think what happened, it's just heartbreaking.
For me, it's a real tragedy, not just the loss of life, but a place that brings so much joy to people can be turned into a murdering ground. So I wanted to bring my daughter down here just to kind of get a sense of the enormity of it and to pay my respects to those who were here on Sunday and didn't make it.
And we're standing on the bridge that the gunmen were standing on when they shot into the park. How does that make you feel?
Oh, pretty sad. I feel like I'm in a place where great evil occurred. So it makes me quite emotional.
Scars that transcend the physical and will continue to haunt not only the Jewish community, but the entire nation.
Tanya Dendrinos. The Prime Minister has today admitted his government could have done more to address anti-Semitism and said he accepts responsibility for his part in that inaction. Anthony Albanese announced a raft of new laws to crack down on anti-Semitism. Among the proposed reforms are increased penalties for preachers who spread hate or promote violence, more powers for the Home Affairs Minister to cancel visas, and new online safety advice. Australia's anti-Semitism envoy Gillian Siegel says the reforms have been a long time coming. Rachel Mealy reports.
The Prime Minister describes anti-Semitism as an evil that tears at the fabric of our country, and he says his government could have done more to stop it.
Governments aren't perfect. I'm not perfect. I, of course, acknowledge that more could have been done, and I accept my responsibility for the part in that as Prime Minister of Australia.
He didn't offer an apology, but was contrite.
I have done my best to respond. Do I regret anyone in this position would regret not doing more in any inadequacies which are there?
The government's anti-Semitism envoy, Gillian Siegel, handed her 20-page plan to crack down on anti-Semitism to the federal government in July. The government has already implemented some, but not all, of her recommendations. Today, Anthony Albanese committed to implementing the remainder. Standing alongside him, Gillian Siegel made a pointed reference about the delay.
This more formal response has been a long time coming. But of course, it does build on a range of activities and work that started as soon as the report was delivered. It is an important next step.
In the wake of the Bondi massacre, Anthony Albanese has faced sustained criticism from the opposition and members of the Jewish community for failing to take stronger action on anti-Semitism. Today, he announced a 5-point plan.
One, aggravated hate speech offence for preachers and leaders who promote violence. Secondly, increased penalties for hate speech promoting violence. Thirdly, making hate an aggravating factor in sentencing crimes for online threats and harassment. Fourthly, developing a regime for listing organisations whose leaders engage in hate speech promoting violence or racial hatred. And fifthly, developing a narrow federal offence for serious vilification based on race and/or advocating racial supremacy.
The Prime Minister says the Home Affairs Minister will also be given greater powers to reject or cancel the visas of anyone who spreads hate and division. Home Affairs Minister Tony Burke says groups and individuals have skirted the edges of hate speech legislation for too long.
Today we're announcing that we're shifting the threshold. We have no time for organisations where their mission is to hate Australia and to hate fellow Australians.
Another of the reforms that were announced, education policy expert David Gonski will lead a year-long task force to ensure the Australian education system teaches young people about anti-Semitism and addresses hatred on university campuses. The opposition leader Susan Lee says the Prime Minister's plan doesn't go far enough, nor does his statement of regret.
And Australians watching their Prime Minister today are angry. This is not the time for excuses. The Prime Minister failed to listen, and the Prime Minister failed to act. Today, we didn't see the Prime Minister take responsibility for the Bondi massacre. We didn't hear the Prime Minister say sorry. More could have been done, he said. Well, Prime Minister, more should have been done.
The Prime Minister hasn't ruled out recalling Parliament over the Christmas break, but says some aspects of the legislation are tricky and may take time to draft. Susan Lee says she wants to see Parliament recalled as soon as possible.
We call on the Prime Minister to immediately recall, bring back the Parliament, to pass legislation to eradicate anti-Semitism and to strengthen Australia's counter-terrorism laws.
The Federal Opposition Leader Susan Lee, Rachel Mealy, the reporter. Andre Obler is an adjunct associate professor at the La Trobe University Law School and the CEO of the Online Hate Prevention Institute. He spoke to me from Jerusalem, where he's been part of the Australian delegation to the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance this week. Dr. Obler, what's your reaction to the measures announced by the Prime Minister today?
Look, I think these measures are needed, welcomed. We're lucky that we, you know, in a sense that we've done the hard work creating a response to anti-Semitism. You know, the Special Envoy's plan was created not as a knee-jerk reaction, but with serious thought over time before this crisis. So we're in a position now where the government adopting it allows us to move forward with carefully considered work that was already ready to go and in place.
Was the government too slow to act, though, on the recommendations of the Special Envoy to counter anti-Semitism?
Look, plan should have been adopted the minute it came out. Instead, there was first a delay while we waited for the Islamophobia plan to also come out. And again, we need to deal with both of these issues, but we need to deal with each of them in their own terms according to their own need. You know, and since then, until now, it's been sitting on the shelf. So that delay, you know, has allowed anti-Semitism to continue to grow in Australia without a proper response.
The federal government has also announced new laws today to crack down on hate speech, lowering the threshold for the committing of a crime. What's your reaction to those new laws?
Having criminal provisions for hate speech is incredibly important. Again, these are not knee-jerk reactions. We have very similar laws at state level. You know, we've used them in Victoria on hate speech against the Muslim community. This will give us the protections. It will allow the government to take action rather than leaving it to the community.
You lead the Online Hate Prevention Institute from Melbourne. I imagine you've been monitoring what's been posted online since the Bondi attack. What sort of things have you been seeing?
We saw people denying that the events were real, blaming the Jewish community, saying this was staged by the community in order to gain sympathy or, you know, push the government into doing things like making new laws. We've seen people continuing to, you know, incite violence against Zionists, saying, well, that's not Jews. That's okay. We can keep doing that. We need a lot more understanding of exactly where these things are crossing the line. And even after the tragic events, some people still aren't getting it.
Not getting it in what sense?
Not understanding that what they're saying is actually inciting violence against Jews. It's inciting hate against the Australian Jewish community. And, you know, they seem to feel that it's perfectly acceptable, particularly, again, when they're using the word Zionist rather than Jews, ignoring the fact that the vast majority of the Australian Jewish community support the existence of the State of Israel, which at its heart is all that Zionism is.
We know that regulating the internet is incredibly difficult and what's posted on it. So the government says it's going to implement all the special envoy's recommendations, including those regarding hate on social media. What do you want to see done?
Look, the fourth recommendation, I think, is particularly important, to see the Special Envoy to Combat Anti-Semitism working with eSafety and having powers to deal with anti-Semitism. The current laws on eSafety are designed to protect individuals. They do not protect vulnerable communities, and that needs to change. And finally, these changes will bring that into effect. Up until now, anything that was attacking more than one person, that was attacking a community, just was not covered by eSafety. It was outside their remit. So with these new powers, we can start seeing content attacking the Jewish community, and hopefully, you know, this can be expanded to protect other communities as well. Content that's attacking vulnerable communities finally being able to be taken down, that eSafety will be able to remove the incitement before it actually leads to further violence.
The Special Envoy's report really emphasises that so many young people don't know much about the Holocaust, if anything at all. They don't really understand anti-Semitism. So improving education in schools and unis is going to be really important. What would you like to see done in that regard?
Part of it does come back to social media. There's been a lot of research done in Australia, and we've seen it mirrored by research done in other countries like the United States. The hate that we're seeing and the lack of understanding of when things cross the line are really most prevalent in the under 30s age group. And that's because that age group is getting a lot of their information through social media without professional journalists checking things.
Dr. Obler, you're in Jerusalem this week for a meeting of the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance. You're a member of the Australian delegation. What's been the response there to the Bondi terror attack?
We started with a moment's silence for the victims within about an hour of the attack occurring, and it's really pervaded the meeting. We've discussed the problems of anti-Semitism. We've discussed what's happening in Australia. We've been discussing what needs to be done around the world to tackle what's been a global rise. There is serious commitment here at IHRA. There's serious expertise, and people have been very supportive. Today, we're at the final part of the IHRA plenary meeting. I know permission has been given for Australia to start the start of the meeting to give a statement. And what the Prime Minister has just announced, I'm sure, will be presented to the other countries, to their ambassadors in this meeting. I'm sure it will be warmly welcomed. I'm sure we will also hear, you know, the concerns that we haven't moved fast enough, that maybe we could have prevented this if things had been done earlier.
Dr. Andre Obler is the CEO of the Online Hate Prevention Institute. This is PM. I'm Samantha Donovan. You can hear all our programs live or later on the ABC Listen app. The telecommunications company Optus has today released a report into its September outage. That outage saw hundreds of people in three states and the NT unable to contact 000 and led to the deaths of two people. The review was led by business and public service executive Kerry Schott and identified widespread failures that contributed to the outage. Dr. Schott's report makes 21 recommendations. Optus is accepting all of them and has indicated some employees may lose their jobs. Julia Bergen has the story.
14 hours, more than 600 emergency calls for help, 450 unanswered, and two deaths. Those are the stark numbers from Optus's outage in September. Optus commissioned an independent review into the outage, and today it was made public. It's called the Schott Review, after its author, Australian executive Dr. Kerry Schott.
Look, the biggest problem with this incident was within the networks and just basically not taking care with procedure.
Dr. Kerry Schott details the technical failures that occurred. A standard system upgrade effectively blocked 000 calls from coming through. When it did redirect some of those 000 calls to another network, what's called a campon, callers were met with around a minute's silence, so many of them just hung up. Despite many users calling Optus to alert them of the issue, it took the telco 13 hours to realise it had a problem.
They made a number of mistakes that were caused by not following the process that was in place and skipping a number of controls that should have alerted them to the fact they were going to have an issue. So it was really carelessness, I suppose.
All up, Kerry Schott counted at least 10 mistakes.
The tragedy of this incident, of course, was the two deaths, but the other tragedy of it was the timing, because that team of people were just starting on their transition work and reforms, and they're really only a few months into that. So they really need to be given time to get the job done.
How much time, Kerry? How much time?
Probably another 2 years, I think.
But others are not convinced. Associate Professor Mark Gregory is an expert on communications technology at RMIT University.
The Optus review into the 000 outage does not go far enough. You have an organisation that really shouldn't have a carrier licence, that they've failed on multiple levels within the organisation and they appear to be slow learners.
He's talking about the lack of change at Optus after its last major outage in 2023 and last major review in 2024. That's the Bean review, which came up with 18 recommendations. The Schott review has 21.
Well, I think if you look at the Bean review and the subsequent Schott review, what you see is they adopt an approach of that outage is gone and we'll just continue on with business as usual.
Mark Gregory says that includes operational problems like teams working from overseas, too many contractors, not enough internal reporting, and governance issues like reporting outages and communicating that to the community. For Swinburne University governance expert Helen Bird, the report fails to address this.
What's lacking, and what really, in my view, is a major issue for this company, is how they managed it from a governance point of view, what they did to supervise and monitor what was going on, and also to ensure that there were systems put in place to reduce the risks of these things occurring.
In a written statement, Optus Chair John Arthur says the company has accepted all 21 recommendations.
It is clear there is much more to do. We recognise the scale of the challenge and will act decisively to make the necessary changes to strengthen the business and rebuild trust.
Julia Bergen with that report. The American President Donald Trump has used a live television address to promote his achievements since taking office 11 months ago. The at times fiery speech included scathing criticism of Democratic Party figures and the announcement of bonus payments for members of the US military. Miwa Bloomer has more.
It was a typically animated speech from the US President.
1 year ago, our country was dead. We were absolutely dead. Our country was ready to fail, totally failed. Now, we're the hottest country anywhere in the world.
Donald Trump using primetime television to address and promote his achievements.
So our border is secure. Inflation has stopped. Wages are up. Prices are down. Our nation is strong. America is respected. And our country is back, stronger than ever before.
One of the key features of his speech was the announcement of a one-off payment to U.S. military personnel.
Tonight, I am also proud to announce that more than 1,450,000, think of this, 1,450,000 military service members will receive a special, we call, Warrior Dividend before Christmas, a Warrior Dividend. We are sending every soldier $1,776.
Jared Monshine from the United States Studies Center says the president was striking a familiar tone.
I think this is a speech that we've seen a number of times before, where he talks about how bad the economy was that he inherited, how bad the inflation was that he inherited, and how the United States was not in a good place. But in less than a year, he has turned things around. And as he says, the best is yet to come.
He says the speech was a direct appeal to the Republican voter base.
You've seen his approval rating amongst Republicans never go below the low 80s. And that includes even after January 6, 2021. Right now, if you look at his approval rating amongst Republicans, it is once again in the low 80s. So not only is he doing fairly poorly amongst the general population, he is also not doing great amongst Republicans, or at least not as great as he has in the past. I think this speech that he gave is a direct effort to mitigate that, and particularly military members of the U.S. military, which traditionally vote more conservative than not.
Jared Monshine from the U.S. Studies Centre at Sydney Uni. Miwa Bloomer reporting. Thanks for joining me for PM. I'm Samantha Donovan. The podcast of the full program is on the ABC Listen app. We'll be back at the same time tomorrow. Good night.
Hi, I'm Andy Park with the ABC News Daily podcast. You know, catastrophe has a way of shaping leaders, whether it's Winston Churchill during World War II, George Bush during 9/11, or Scott Morrison during the Black Summer bushfires. It may define Prime Minister Anthony Albanese's leadership too. Today, the chief political correspondent at The Conversation, Michelle Grattan, on whether Anthony Albanese can rise to the challenge. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.